Hello and welcome to another episode of the Fast Break Podcast. This is Amon Kidwai. I'm joined by Patrick Martin, coming to you live from Phoenix after the Huskies' 86-72 triumph over the Crimson Tide. They are on to the national championship for the second year in a row. Patrick, I'm reaching a point where I'm feeling like I'm starting to run out of great things to say about this team and what they do. So impressed by how they pulled away late in this one. Your thoughts after the Bama win?
First of all, happy to be boots on the ground here. That was tense. I didn't feel good at all in the first half with the way Bama was connecting. They hit eight threes in the first half. They, you know, that's all of the talk beforehand was like, well, if they hit 15 to 20 threes, you know, they have a puncher's chance. Well, they were doing that. And what had scared me the most is, I know you had said, you said to me in an aside, like, oh, well, they hit all these threes and we're only, we're still down four. Marcus Sears didn't hit a three until the second half. So it's like, that really scared me because it's like, all right, you know, it was Rylan Griffin, it was Grant Nelson hitting one, Aaron Estrada, the New Jersey boy, you know, really showing out in front of Dan Hurley in the first half. And so my worry was like, oh my God, if Sears just starts cooking, like, what's going to happen? This could be, you know, a type of avalanche that, you know, UConn has always done to teams. And especially after Grant Nelson had that, like, crazy, tomahawk slam on Klingon to erase yet another one of UConn's, like, mini 7 or 8 runs, that like, tension crept back up of, like, oh, this could be how it ends, dude. Like, it, you know, just met this team that goes nuclear on them. Yet at the same time, when you look at the box score, yet another 13-point or more victory, all five starters in double figures. Steph Castle, a career high 21 points. I have a lot to say about him later. Alex Caribbean, 2 of 4 from three. Cam Spencer, 3 of 5. That was like the big bugaboo everybody was worried about, especially in the first half. I think, what did they shoot in the first half? They shot 5 of 15. Okay, from 3. Not terrible. But, like, that was the first time I was sweating.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. UConn really did face its mortality today. It's one of those things that sometimes you get humbled at different points in the NCAA tournament. You know, sometimes an early round opponent can get you. But that hasn't happened yet for UConn. And I have to say, I was a little concerned with how UConn might respond to a scenario where the game's not put away by the midpoint of the second half. And so, yeah, with that, tons of credit to Bama, tying the game up on multiple occasions, including with about 12 minutes left, game tied at 56. At that point, though, UConn goes on a 30-14 run. So they've just had such a good killer instinct for putting teams away to even do it in this game, given how competitive it was. You got to credit that. And for UConn, Klingon and Castle putting this one away with their work offensively, I think is a remarkable development for a team that, again, it's like, has been so good, continues raising the bar. If Klingon and Castle are really feeling it offensively, that's potentially, again, another level to be.
And it took Klingon some time. I mean, he had 8 points in the first half. But he really struggled out of the gate in the second, I think. And that coincided with Grant Nelson turning into Steph Curry out there, not with the way he was shooting threes, but just like crossing him up and getting to the rim. And as always, Hurley has the right lever to pull, and that was Samson Johnson, who had the ability to guard Nelson on the perimeter. And that slowed down his momentum when Bama had finally tied it again. And because, you know, Alabama doesn't have a Samson Johnson type to throw out there and combat that. By the time Klingon came back in at the under 8, he had 8 of his, you know, final points in those 8 minutes to completely bury them. And look, Nate Oates is a hell of a coach. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, the reason that UConn was playing Alabama and not North Carolina is because he essentially said, all right, I'm going to not guard Elliot Cadu and, you know, force our, you know, add a guy onto RJ Davis and Cormac Ryan, North Carolina shooters. He did the same thing essentially today to UConn with Steph Castle. And Steph Castle responded with, okay, well, I'm just going to take all this space till whenever someone comes at me, finish through traffic, or make the extra pass. So to have your two highest ceiling, like NBA caliber players really step up, that makes perfect sense because, you know, Alabama has dudes up and down the roster, and I feel like this was the game where they needed that kind of, like, NBA pedigree people to step up. And that's not, you know, no disrespect to Cam and Tristan and everything. Everyone made plays, but when the athleticism of the game is so high, you need your top athletes to match that level, and that's what Castle and Klingon did.
Yeah, I mean, huge for Castle to hit those two early threes given the situation and what was going on. He took that first one right when it was there. What I also really liked, though, out of Castle early was the way they went to him down low, and he was able to just quickly beat his man for a bucket. And that's when I started feeling a lot of confidence in just the offensive game plan and what was about to go down. Not just that, I really felt like Bama didn't have anybody to contend with Klingon, and we saw that, you know, exactly how that played out. But if they were also able to go to Castle like that as almost a similar type of mismatch, then I was feeling pretty good. Castle actually mentioned he said he felt disrespected by that. So good for him for answering back. And I think, you know, we've talked a ton about his defense and what he brings and what that means, but we saw the offensive arsenal on display in a big way. This guy can get to the rim. He's got a lot of, I don't even know what the term is. You know, it's like moving the ball around near the hoop in an advantageous way.
I saw a lot of second twitch, explosiveness that he doesn't necessarily get the credit for in that one offensive rebound where he just, you know, it looked like he got hacked like two or three times, and he was so forceful going up with it. And again, he just, he's peeling back layers of the onion to his game, and to do that as a freshman, as sometimes the fifth option on the team, sometimes the first option, never know when his name's going to get called. I talked to him after and said, like, did you guys have a feeling that they were going to sag off you a little bit? He goes, oh, for sure. Like, I watched the film on North Carolina. I saw how they treated Cadeau, and we knew that was going to be me. They were right there ready for it. They even, you know, brought out the old Andre Jackson baseline cut for a lob. Newton and Castle both talked about that after the game, of like when we saw the positioning of like where that Alabama defender was shading him, the bench called it out immediately. Like, mm-hmm. they recognized that right away, and that speaks so much to the experience that everyone on the UConn coaching staff has. Is they can pick out on that right away and say, let's, you know, okay, you're going to give us the Andre Jackson treatment. We have a remedy for that, as we all saw last year. And the other thing I'll say is, as tight and tense as I was, once UConn cooled off Grant Nelson, thanks to Samson Johnson and then Donovan Klingon's, I felt great about that game because I saw how Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer controlled the tempo so well. They had, but the whole team had 20 assists, only 4 turnovers. What'd you say? That was the best turnover rate of the year, mm-hmm. I think. And that is, I felt comfortable. There weren't going to be any splash negative plays where, you know, Tristan throws some boneheaded lob and they don't get back and there's a foul on Caravan and he fouls out and next thing you know, it's like a 5 or 6 point swing. That's not going to happen against this team. And you start to realize that around like the 8 minute mark of like, I think we're clear, we're good on this. You know, the panic was occurring when it was, you know, Nelson looking unstoppable with like 12 to 13 minutes left. Like, how are we going to manage this? Especially like everyone kind of had to play with semi foul trouble.
Yeah.
Like they left Castle in a little bit to try to walk the line. They had Diarra doing the same thing. Cam Spencer, a little bit of foul trouble. No, it wasn't Cam. It was Caravan. Wait, no, he had 0 fouls in the second half. But it was still something that the staff managed so well. And all these little micro incidents of, like, experience shining through that eventually, you know, the cream rose to the top.
Yeah. One quick other note on Castle is just, you know, it's it's kind of interesting to think maybe on a different type of team, he'd be asked to be this kind of player from the get-go and have ups and downs. You know, he'd probably have some high volume, a lot more shots and just holding onto the ball a lot more on a different kind of team. But, you know, something we've talked about all year is just how good of a situation Steph has been in and kind of the way Hurley managed his whole thing. I think for UConn, yeah, it was weird. Definitely felt a lot of tension just, again, because Alabama was responding every time it looked like UConn might pull away and start to make this one a double-digit laugher in the earlier stages.
Did you know that basketball is a game of runs?
You know, people have been saying that it's a game of runs. I was also told that Alabama likes to run quite a bit, and so, you know, I was on high alert
for the record. For the record, zero fast break points, by the way. So better go back to that weave.
better go work on the weave, guys.
Better go work on the weave. No, and that's no disrespect to the Alabama program, because they were nasty today. Yeah. That's more, I'm throwing shade at like the Alabama media folks, you know, not understanding ball, essentially, is I'll put it nicely.
And on those lines, you know, again, that's where the confidence came for me with UConn, even though the first half was tense, even though it was tense throughout. If the other team has started 8 of 11 from 3 and you're still up 4 or 5 in 20 minutes, again, just like it's that's just really good. That's good for you. That says a lot about you and your team. And they just kept executing. They never looked phased. I was concerned that they would be, just because they hadn't been punched like that. Right. And yeah, you know, someone receives their punches and is still alive that late in the game. I thought anything could have happened, but then the inevitable occurred.
Well, you know, I'm very bullish on Alabama after seeing them in person, and they do a maximized computer-driven version of what Seton Hall essentially did, which was spread the court, go one-on-one, and win the matchups, and if help comes, you kick it out to the open man. But because at times all five Alabama players on the court could shoot, that help wasn't coming. Alex Caravan, Tristan Newton, Cam Spencer, they are elite positional defenders because they are always in the right spots. Well, you can't send them to help, because if they sag off their man, then it's kicked out to a shooter. So this was nightmare fuel in the beginning, with Alabama feeling itself and then UConn having to get up tighter. And again, bringing it back to Klingon, you know, so good at avoiding foul trouble and being able to come in and out with Samson Johnson and not have to rely on a certain type of style until he was out of foul trouble. Because that you know, there are, you know, foot speed questions, you know, about certain parts of UConn's lineup. And that this was a game, and this is why everyone was like worried about Auburn before Auburn shit the bed against Yale. it turns out they couldn't even handle like our worst Connecticut school, but that was what the big worry. You know, the two types of teams that have beat UConn this year were and I'm not counting Kansas because that was without Steph Castle in the fog. But like when you look at Seton Hall and Creighton, I just said what Seton Hall did, and then we get to look at a little bit in this championship game of what like Purdue will do a lot of what Creighton did on the road.
Yeah, after the game, so Hurley said that Bama demonstrated elements of Xavier's transition game, Marquette's screen setting, and Creighton's three-point shooting. That was what he said. He created a little Frankenstein, a little Biggie's Frankenstein.
Neapolitan ice cream of basketball. I love it.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, Hurley really feeling himself, as always. I love that for him.
I would love to see him just do that every game. I'm like, yeah, you know, they got a little bit of, you know, Marquette's corner shooting, and then they run pick and rolls like DePaul, just like sprinkle everything in there. I love the references, man. Everyone knows the references are on point.
He's got to field a lot of questions about how great his team is, which, you know, it's like there's pros and cons. It's at one point you probably just get a little tired of saying the same types of things over and over.
I think he's been tired all year. Why do you think he's a walking gold mine of quotes? because he's so sick of saying the same shit that he's just going to kind of riff.
Yeah. I mean, earlier this week we found out that he used to teach sex ed.
Yeah.
Which is just an absolutely hilarious thing to think about.
I prefer not to think about that. I have a question in the chamber, not about sex ed. Dear God, no, absolutely not. But because he also taught, I think, Roman history or ancient civilizations. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I just watched The Holdovers, and their teacher was very, and that was a great movie. And I was just like, I want to, you know, I took 4 years of Latin. I was a history major in college. I want to, you know, dig deep into my Roman history knowledge and toss a curveball at Hurley, provided things go well on Monday, and see how he handles it.
He said he mentioned collapse of the Roman Empire, so you can talk about that.
That's easy. I'm gonna dig deep. I'm gonna be like, throw my history question. Like, what can you find any similarities to like the military campaign in Carthage versus you know, the way you had to use Steph Castle?
Yeah, I'm gonna ask him where babies come from. Jesus. I could not stop imagining Dan Hurley yelling, you know, some of the technical terms you learn in sex ed. No. You know, it just it's stuff that will be very hard to remove from my active brain. But I think what I was saying was just, you know, he gets so many questions. You know, your team is so good. How do you stay so good? And he just, it's almost like, I don't want to get into this territory, but it's almost like a politician's rallies where he just has a few like bits that he goes to back and forth. And people do like ask him, like, say lock her up. He's like, dude, say the depth thing. And he's like, yeah, we're a deep team. Anyone can score. We got five guys that can go for two. You know, it's just like he has that line. They're unselfish. We stay true to our identity.
You can pick up on his cadence when he doesn't, not necessarily dislike a question, but like you said, has his autopilot on. Yeah. When you go, yeah, that's when you know you're going to get like the recycled bit. Mm-hmm. And it's a testament to how freaking insanely good this team is that he has been on autopilot for the better part of a year now.
Yeah, and I mean, again, like how much more can you dissect and break down a team that's won all of its NCAA tournament games by double digits? You know, like, literally, think about like the regular process of this kind of stuff. We're in it, right? Coverage. You talk about like, what are you afraid of with this opponent? For like three straight games, let's call it Northwestern, San Diego State, and Illinois, you're like, I'm not that worried about this opponent. You know, like Illinois, I had a little bit of respect for their offense, but you're going into the game going, I expect a big UConn win. It's a crazy way to be in the NCAA tournament.
I admire that because I'm just too much of a pessimist to like, I've always looked like, it's like, you know, Northwestern, boo-boo, it goes crazy. But you're right. Like, look, hand up. And I have a quote from an Alabama friend of mine that I want to read here on air. Can't be in the premature chicken counting business. And I responded to him, business is booming. I would like to shut down that business because, like, you're right. You know, there needs to be this expectation that they will figure it out. You know, the first half was a little rough. Alabama exposed a lot of things, as we just talked about. They played, honestly, I think, like a hell of a lot harder than Illinois did. Mm-hmm. But they found a way. It's hard because even right now I'm thinking like, well, it's like, you know, they got all those points in the end when Bama had kind of given up. Like, you know, it was a 10-point game with 2 minutes left. But it's college basketball. More teams blow a 10-point lead with 2 minutes left than expand that to 14 and completely put the game out of reach. Like, but we're so conditioned to expect chaos and expect all this variance. Especially with the most that was the big narrative, the big analytics team.
Yeah.
You know, well, you know, it's Dan Hurley 1, computers 0.
Well, and again, like, to go back to the, it's so important to mention and point out, like, Alabama was 8 of 11 from 3 at the half. UConn was not at its best. Like you said, 5 of 15 at the half from 3 for UConn. That, you know, like, and then even across a lot of the second half, you could say that UConn looked out of sorts at times. I wouldn't call it turnovers. 100%. You know, like, it wasn't turnovers, but Alabama was doing some stuff defensively for the first, 30 minutes of the game that was confusing
UConn. They were physical. I mean, you see, Steph's tights were torn up. Hassan had, the cut on his face. Tristan Newton hit the floor hard and was slow to get up a couple of times. Klingon hit the floor, Cam. I mean, I think Alabama brought probably, which is funny because it really wasn't what they were known for, but they brought the most physical environment, I think, to that game. And it kind of, UConn blinked a little bit. Not blinked as in, gave a step back, but oh shit, okay, we gotta win this one in the mud, okay. Mm-hmm. We thought this was going to be, the track meet and everything. It's like, no, okay, we gotta match you on that. And that's, that's what Hassan said after the game. It's like, we know we can win anyway. And in a weird way, they're imposing their will on the game, but they're also reading and adapting to what the other team is doing. And when you're doing both of those things at an elite level, you get to where you are now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to shout out my buddy Brian, who also said something similar, not happening today. UConn not going home today. That was the halftime conversation. And the prophecy was foretold. Yeah, it's like a high-scoring game, but it was not a track meet, by any stretch of the imagination. Another not low-scoring game was the Purdue matchup, which occurred right before that. The Boilermakers did not have a ton of a challenge from NC State. They won their game 63-50. It was a little bit of a snoozer, I'd say. We don't need to talk too much about that game itself, but how are you feeling about this Purdue matchup?
As we were listening to Westwood One Radio, no free ads. As we were listening earlier, that NC State was a banked prayer from losing to Virginia and not even being in this discussion. Now, again, you all know DJ Burns, stockholder here, one of the founding members. I'm on the board. But Purdue held NC State to 42% from two, 26% from three, out-rebounded them by 13, and Edie with a casual 20-10, probably not even breaking a sweat. That's what probably was going to be the most likely outcome. As cool as that story was, they were just simply outmatched. And when you look at NC State's road, thinking a Duke team that squeaked by Houston that just lost its star point guard, and then had to play Oakland and a Marquette team that was one of the worst iterations of Marquette I've seen in years. Look, they get credit for where they are at, but that had run out of steam. So we get UConn light, Diet UConn, Goodwill UConn here, because so much of what Purdue does is seen in UConn's DNA and pedigree. The storylines are everywhere. I don't know how deep you want to get into it, but I don't know, man. You can talk me into this either way, that I think they're going to roll them like they did Illinois, or it could be a combination of UConn blew out Creighton at home and got blown out by Creighton on the road. So add that up together, it probably would have been a tight game in a neutral court, something similar. The 6.5 line, I don't know where that came from, because I think it's going to be a one or two possession game. But again,
that's the line for this game.
Yeah,
that was the opening line. All
right. Yeah, but again, at the same time, I don't think anyone was expecting a 30-0 run against the number one, number two ranked offense in KenPom. I like this. I'm more comfortable with this matchup schematics wise, because Purdue doesn't necessarily have the athletes that can bother UConn as far as foot speed and getting into the paint. Now, they're very well drilled. They can hit their threes. But I think UConn can give them problems from a shot making perspective. But at the same time, UConn has just dominated teams inside all tournament, all year. It's been the huge support system when the three ball isn't falling. Well, it's going to be harder to do that with Edie. He does not leave the paint. He does not fall out. He does not come out of the game. So those threes need to be hitting and falling, which sounds dumb. It's a Bob Huggins, you got to make shots, but whoever can disrupt the shot making most wins that game.
Yeah, it's, I mean, such an interesting matchup with Edie and Klingon down low, to state the incredibly obvious. What the nation has been asking for all year, not just with Edie and Klingon, but with UConn and Purdue. A lot of people arguing about whether who among those is the best team in the country across the larger part of this season. So we're going to get the matchup. I mean, it's going to be great for college basketball. I think it's huge. You don't always get the two best teams in the national championship game, so you've set up something pretty marquee here, and I think that'll be cool.
Just the one hope, you know, send a message to the basketball gods, is keep the officials out of it. And I know that sounds tacky to like, oh, well, you know, but there is a reputation, whether you like it or not, about Purdue and about Edie, whether it's I'm not going to get into whether it's warranted or not, but the foul disparity is there. And that's, I think, like, we have to acknowledge that elephant in the room, where it's like, if UConn's playing really well, but Klingon picks up three fouls, or, you know, there has to be some drastic lineup change, and then Purdue starts to impose their will. Has UConn ever had to fight back from a deficit?
Right.
At all? What Alabama was up by, I think, at most three, or what does it say their largest lead was?
They led by five.
They led by five. And it was a very quick 5 minutes, recall. So, you know, if Purdue builds a two possession cushion based off free throws, you really gotta, you know, the team will have to call back to this championship DNA and the patience and keep running our stuff, keep getting stops, don't worry about the refs. And I hope just that it doesn't become a whistle fest, because, you know, like you said, the whole sports world is going to be watching this. This is what everybody asked for. This is probably how it should have been. And, you know, like, you really want to see this incredible team leave no doubt and, like, finish with, like, a flourish.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I think that's what UConn has proven all year, is that they really have not let down or let themselves get disappointed in this kind of situation. I think, you know, just thinking about the situation, like, everything that UConn talked about, the upside, the potential, the opportunity, it's here, right? It's all here and you've got it. So I feel like, again, you have every reason to be confident when you're UConn. I'm going to go with my prediction here that it's going to be not as close a game as this Alabama game was. I like UConn, and I think the double-digit streak stays alive. The Huskies win. They win by more than 10 against Purdue. I just don't, you know, I think we're going to see a very great matchup down low. I just don't know if the rest of the guys versus the rest of the guys for UConn versus Purdue, I don't think Purdue can match up there.
Yeah, no, if you say that if you cancel out Edie and Klingon on both ends, I'll take UConn supporting cast any day of the week. And that's maybe we're, you know, you just need to dumb it down a little bit like that. And that's how you look at it. But hey, you know, we'll be boots on the ground. If anyone's out here on Sunday or Monday, come, I don't know, see you. I don't know.
Find us at the concert. We'll be at the concert on Sunday. Yeah, at
the concert, or hike Camelback or something. Anyone wants to play some golf? My line's open.
Mine is not for golf, but yeah, that's going to do it for us here. UConn, Purdue, tipping off at 9:20 Eastern on TBS, the national championship game. What a blessing it is, folks. We will see you there. Thank you all for listening.